Hello, one and all. Hope you're all well. Welcome back to another episode of Move, Breathe, Live with me, Wibbs Coulson. Hope you're well and looking after yourself. Just a little pre-warning, as always, before we get started, that there could be the odd swear word and profanity throughout this podcast. I am trying to dial my potty mouth in, so hopefully over time I can get to the stage where you don't have to worry about your children's ears. So obviously, just in case, just be aware that you might need to cover their ears up or just be able to explain what the naughty word means. Anyway, back onto this session, this podcast. I hope you all enjoyed the last ones. Mike Fitch was last week. This week we have got Brittany, and I think she's Murphy and previously was a different surname. But she is a oral myologist, I think that's the word. I'm going to get that wrong. She came up with about, there's about four or five different words, functional oromyologist, something along those lines. Basically, we're looking at the mouth, we're looking at the jaw, we're looking at the breathing through the nose, we're looking at all things, some dental sides of things, we're looking at tongue ties, we're looking at all sorts of things that prevent us from maybe being optimally structurally sound around our face. So I hope you enjoy it. It was a fascinating one for me, and listening back to it when I've just been sorting it, I again feel like I picked up loads from it. So hopefully you will too. Might be a nice one to share with your any mums that you know, mums or dads. They might enjoy it too. There's some stuff about kids and their mouths and tongue ties and breastfeeding and things. So hopefully that'll be of interest. So yeah, go check it out. Let me know what you think. As always, make sure you like, subscribe, rate, review, do all that jazz, because it does help me. And as always, do just let me know if there's anyone you would like me to chat to, and I'll see what I can do. Anyway, have a great week, fortnight, and I'll be back next week with Nathan Helberg from, you might be able to hear my dogs playing, from Zoo, which is a kind of a movement modality practice. So yeah, back next in a fortnight with that, but in the meantime, enjoy, have a great time, all. Right, hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of Move, Breathe, Live. I'm actually quite excited to talk today to my guest, who I will let introduce herself in just a few moments, but I just want to say, someone I've been following for a little while, and I think talks a lot about the same things that I do. So hopefully if you've been interested in what I have been talking about, then this one will be a good one for you, especially around the breathing and oral health side of things. So Brittany, can I pass over to you, please, to introduce yourself as who you are and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. I want to say thank you first for, you know, having me on here. I'm super excited to be here. A little bit about myself. So my name is Brittany. I'm still getting used to saying Murphy because I just got married in early June.
Congratulations.
So I still kind of say Brittany Sierra Murphy, but I am a myofunctional therapist. My background is in dental hygiene. That is what got me interested into myofunctional therapy. I've been practicing myofunctional therapy for, let's see, since 2016. I'm also a Buteyko breathing educator, and I am also an educator for Dental Sleep Toolbox and Airway Health Solutions. So we teach other dental hygienists basically to become myofunctional therapists and to begin incorporating these practices into their daily clinics.
Amazing. Well, that's a lot in a short period of time. So let's start then, because I'd say the most used word there was myofunctional therapist. Now, I'm pretty certain I had no idea what it was when I first probably started following you. I think, again, I've mentioned it before we started, but I think I started following you not long around the same time as I did a podcast with Sandra Kahn, who wrote the book Jaws.
Great book.
It was, yeah, really great book. So, and then she was talking about my function, I've got that wrong.
No, there's a bunch of different names. So myofunctional therapy, oral facial myology, oral facial myofunctional therapy, they're all interchangeable.
Cool. So what is that then? Let's get to that, because I had to look it up because I had no idea what she was talking about. And so for people who have no idea, and especially maybe how it relates to dentistry perhaps, and then
So the technical definition, it's the neuromuscular reeducation of the oral and facial muscles. So we do a series of facial exercises and behavior modification techniques to promote optimal oral rest posture, which we'll talk about in a second, I'm sure. You know, breathing, sleeping, chewing, swallowing. A really great friend of mine and colleague, Carice, likens myofunctional therapy to personal training, which I really love. Mm-hmm. So personal training in the sense we work below the eyes, above the shoulders. And I love that analogy because our facial, our oral and facial muscles are the same muscles. They're the same muscles as the rest of our body. If we don't use them, we lose them, right? So you can't just, you can go see your personal trainer once a week, three times a week. But then if you leave there and you head to McDonald's, you know, for a Big Mac, you're not going to create good habits. You're not going to create sustainable lifestyle changes. And it's the same thing with myofunctional therapy. Yes, we give you a series of exercises, but say those exercises take up, let's just call it 30 minutes out of your day, but they're probably not even going to take up 30 minutes. Yep. What are you doing the other 23 and a half hours of the day? So it's creating that overall awareness of how you're posturing all these muscles.
I love it. That makes so much sense. And for me, outside of the breath work sides of things, for me, I spend a lot of my time looking at movement and from the feet up. And, you know, I've worked with under Gary Ward for a while, so it's all feet. And he always says the same. It's kind of like physios, PTs work from essentially the ankles up, and like then podiatrists work from the ankles down. And then there's no real thought about how they might potentially work together. And it's kind of, it makes total sense actually. Cause I mean, I've spoken to Sandra and I've followed you and stuff. So I have an idea, and I wouldn't say I do 20 minutes a day, but you know, I try to be much more aware of my functional or my facial postures. But yeah, let's get into this a little bit more then. Cause I think it's, if we go from, let's say, children, because I'd say that's probably the place where the biggest opportunity for improvement would happen, would you say? I mean, I would assume by the time my facial structure has been fixed as an adult, there's less opportunity for change.
Yes. I mean, we do work with patients of all ages, but mm-hmm. you have to think we can always optimize function, but we're only going to be able to optimize it to your current structure, right?
Yes.
So to that point, yes. But you know, there are other avenues you can go down to help change that structure even as an adult. But yes, I mean, things are always easier in children as they're growing, you know, but what a lot of people don't know, even by age 4, 60% of craniofacial development is done. And I see a lot of parents and they're always like, you know, is it too early to start? And I'm like, no, we should have started a couple of years ago.
So do you find there's a, with that, because I've spoken to a few parents over the last few months and stuff talking about this, and they've been in touch with me, and you know, I don't really deal with kids because I don't have kids and I'm not mm-hmm. really, you know, into them. but you know, and from my perspective, it's kind of the issue with children is getting them to do it. You know, as an adult, at least you have the motivation to say,
yes,
I've got sleep apnea, whatever, I need to improve this. But as a child, you know, ending up with mouth breathing, kind of, you know, everything that goes with that. I guess that's maybe the harder, you know, you want to start early, but then you've got that brick wall that you potentially run into.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, you know, everybody always asks, who do you enjoy? What age population do you enjoy working better with? And I wouldn't say that I like working with, you know, younger kids or, you know, adults or what have you, but with adults, we can be much more in tune with what's going on. So the feedback I'm getting from my adults is awesome. So I do love working with adults. And with kids, yeah, compliance is an issue because myofunctional therapy is 98% patient compliance. I mean, I could be the best myofunctional therapist that ever, ever, ever existed. I'm not, but even if I was, it's still not up to me. You know, I see these patients once a week, once every other week for 30 minutes, but what is it that they're doing all that other time? And like I said, they can be doing their exercises maybe, but then if, you know, the child's a big gamer and they're constantly, you know, slumped over head forward, we're kind of on this perpetual wheel.
Absolutely. So let's just with that, as you kind of talked about that then, and I've kind of briefly mentioned like breathing and jaw, slack jawed and whatever else, but why certainly kids, like I know some people will have heard us, me talking to Sandra or whoever else, and even Patrick from Bateco Clinic and stuff, but like, you know, why is it for you that actual coming from an oral dental point of view, then, you know, with airway, because I've see, you know, as I say, I've been following you and there's a lot about sleep hygiene and all these bits and pieces, but how is it that oral hygiene, oral facial posturing and hygiene for want a better word, affects facial structure? Because I guess that's a fairly reasonable place to maybe start.
Yeah, so we like to think that the tongue acts as a natural palate expander. So if the tongue is resting up in the roof of the mouth since birth, which it should, because we are born obligate nasal breathers. And mm-hmm. if we are nasal breathing, that tongue should be resting up in that roof of the mouth. The tongue acts as like a scaffold. So if the tongue is up there, the upper jaw will learn to grow around it. If that tongue posture drops for could be any reason, tongue tie, enlarged tonsils and adenoids, allergies, whatever is the cause of that posture being low, that upper jaw now has nothing to form around. So it becomes very constricted. That palate becomes very, very high and vaulted, can cause a deviation in the septum. And then you have to think, well, what does that mean for the lower jaw? In every dental occlusion, except for class 3, the lower jaw falls behind the upper jaw. So mm-hmm. if you know that you have a narrow upper jaw, you're going to have a narrow or receded lower jaw, right? And then you want to think, well, then why do we care? What does that have to do with breathing? The upper jaw is also the floor of the nose. So mm-hmm. they mirror each other. So if you have a very small upper jaw, you're going to have a small nasal cavity.
And then that's going to also, if your jaw is like receded because of the narrow, then you're also then going to be narrowing the airway behind as well.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I guess then, especially when it comes to sleep, let's say, as we sort of mentioned, like snoring and apnea and stuff is then going to be much more likely, I assume, if you've got a much narrower airway and the tongue's in the way and turbulent air.
I mean, thinking about that space itself, yes, if we are pushing things back, we're literally impeding on the airway. And mm-hmm. now if we're not having room, if your tongue is supposed to live in the top of your mouth, but there's literally not enough real estate for it, and then you go to lay down in bed, I mean, gravity's going to take over. That tongue is going to fall back into the airway and it's going to obstruct your airway.
And so from my perspective, as someone who is obsessed with how I breathe and I spend my life focusing on nothing but, and, you know, I realize I'm not the norm for people, but, you know, I still notice, and I tape my mouth at night, but I still notice if I don't tape my mouth, I'm still at times noticing I'm snoring, or I'm noticing, you know, there's a snore, or there's my mouth is falling open, I've got a dry mouth when I wake up, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Now, when I've spoken to Sandra, and she's talked about how, you know, the mouth is only one, valve or whatever, not valve, maybe the wrong word, but, you know, there's seven different, did she say valve? I've forgotten the word now. Seven different things within the jaw structure that we need to be thinking about for like a better oral kind of health and facial health. So just taping the mouth isn't necessarily going to obviously then hold the jaw forward and hold the tongue up. From your perspective, obviously it does because it's what you do, but, you know, doing the exercises, is the big part of that retraining, say, tongue to the roof of the mouth?
Yeah, and it's not just about the tongue. You know, there's been research that shows that myofunctional therapy or oral pharyngeal exercises have been shown to reduce the AHI, which, you know, we don't only want to worry about the AHI in a sleep study, but the mm-hmm. AHI is how somebody is diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah.
But it's been shown to reduce that AHI in 50% in adults and 62% in children. So, you know, a lot of the exercises that we're doing, actually, this is really interesting. I was listening to another myofunctional therapy group, and one of the exercises that we do is we place a button in front of the teeth, we close our lips, it's like resistance, right? And then mm-hmm. you pull the button out and you hear this popping sound. Well, this myofunctional therapist, her name is Samantha Weaver, went to Stanford University, and the ENT there wanted to study like what these exercises were doing on that pharyngeal wall. And so they, you know, hooked up a camera to her, and they found that this exercise, which we learn as myofunctional therapists as a lip exercise to help increase, you know, lip strength, okay. was actually working that pharyngeal area. Wow. So, you know, these exercises, it's, yes, we are neuromuscular re-educating the muscles to rest in a certain area, but we're strengthening these muscles. We're toning these muscles. So, you know, it's not shocking to, you know, then see on the flip side that these patients are then being able to breathe better and sleep better, right? There's procedures out there that some dentists do it with a laser. It's called night laser. And they basically laser the tissues in the back of the throat to help constrict them. And that coupled with myofunctional therapy with my patients, I've had incredible results with.
So sorry on that. I can't get my head around that. So they laser the back of the throat to what? Constrict the muscles to open the airway, to make the airway.
Tighten up the tissues.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine. Yep. Okay. Yep. And so what you were talking about with the button there, I could be completely wrong here because I can't quite picture what you mean, but are you going to do it for us and we can?
Yeah.
Cool. Perfect. I can share this. And again, when I spoke to Sandra, I'm going to probably bring her up because, you know, it's how I got into this and
yeah,
whatever.
Of course.
But the from her perspective of obviously there's traditional orthodontistry, which tends to then be like more cosmetic, it would seem, and drawing things, it almost pulling retractive. And then she obviously practices more forward dontics, as she calls it, and like this idea of drawing things forward. And then she's got that, I've forgotten what it's called now, but the green thing that they put in the mouth, and then it kind of seems to teach them, they have to, I don't know, get the tongue and everything in the right position. And then this little thing will pop out and it will like give you almost like a little feedback of where is the correct position.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with that. I mean, maybe if I were to see a picture.
Yeah, I'm going to have a quick
look. So many appliances out there now. You know, and as a myofunctional therapist, we definitely have to familiarize ourselves with, wow, that was a tough one for me this morning.
It was,
I haven't had any coffee. You know, we have to know a lot of them because different providers believe in different.
This is a
it's kind of
like a vacuum activator, I think she calls it.
Yeah,
or they call it.
Cool.
So I think I like it like that. Fits in, and then so I think something about the posture or the tension. So go. Look.
So this is just a button that sits right in front of the teeth here.
Yeah.
You close your lips around it.
Mm-hmm.
And pop cool. it out.
And so are you trying to restrict that, restrain it? You're almost trying to hold it in with your teeth.
Yeah, not your teeth, with your lips.
And
yes, you're playing tug of war. Like with the little kids, we tend to play, call it actually tug of war.
Cool. Nice. And so then that's obviously then having a strengthening through the jaw, through the facial muscles. But then, as you say, that because of those facial muscles are then getting worked better, it's actually then having an effect on the pharyngeal airway as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, form follows function. So function is so important. And it's interesting because when I was practicing clinical hygiene, I remember, you know, we always would get the orthodontist reports back. And once I took my myofunctional therapy course and I'm like, I want to go back and I want to read some of these reports.
Mm-hmm.
And I would read them and they would say, they would note that the patient had a tongue thrust or the patient had, you know, incorrect oral rest posture, and basically say that the stability of results, you know, is questionable due to this, but they never referred to anybody. They never referred to a myofunctional therapist. So, you know, and myofunctional therapy is not new. It's been in the literature for over a century. You know, so yeah, it's not as popular. It's getting more popular, you know,
but do you think that's because it's very much they have to do it themselves? Cause that's what I find with my work is I'm completely hands-off in my movement therapy work. Like it's all, I'm essentially showing you what's inefficient and how you can move better, but then it's up to you. You've got to go home and do it. And so
I do. I think that a lot of the orthodontists just think like, oh, you know, the patients aren't going to, you know, go home and be practicing these exercises, but it's still, you know, it's not adding stability to their results. So it's like, wouldn't you rather make that referral, let the patient understand what is going on? Like maybe if we explain to the patient how this is impacting them, and educate them. Like education is the foundation of everything. If you can explain something to someone very well and like the light bulb goes off, like if you were to tell me or tell my parents, I mean, I didn't have braces growing up, but my brother did.
Yeah.
And if you were to tell my parents that after investing $6,000 that my brother was probably going to relapse unless he fixed this tongue thrust, and the tongue thrust therapy, myofunctional therapy was only going to cost another $1,500.
Yeah.
I find most parents are going to go that route. I mean, you're making this huge investment and to not fix the root cause, the underlying problem as to why they even need the orthodontics. It's mind-boggling.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's the clients I have who are the most successful are the ones who I think have managed to, for one, they tend to be the ones who have turned up to me because they've tried everything else. But like when I've explained and they've said, look, you have pain here because there's this and that, and we've got this injury and this and blah, blah, and they go, oh, no, why hasn't anyone ever told me that before?
Yes.
And, I'm assuming it's probably similar with the jaw and the face. Like, so you mean I need to work on this and then that's going to help with this? And yeah. And so, sorry, on that as well, in a minute, yeah. Can you just explain what the tongue thrust is? Because I'm not totally sure I understand what a tongue thrust is.
Yes. So a tongue thrust, so you could have a low and forward tongue rest posture. Like
right.
When you're sitting here talking to me, that tongue could just be, you know, down low. It could be in the floor of your mouth. It could be in mm-hmm. the middle of your mouth. It might even be up a little bit, but forward against your teeth. But a tongue thrust swallowing pattern, when you swallow, that tongue is literally thrusting forward. Okay. Now it can thrust forward, which we would call that an anterior tongue thrust.
Mm-hmm.
It can also thrust, like kind of in between your back teeth here. We would call that a posterior tongue thrust.
Okay.
Now it could be one sided, it could be both sides. So there's different types of tongue thrust, and that you might've also heard of, like a reverse swallowing pattern or an infantile
swallowing pattern.
Immature swallowing pattern.
Nice. And so again, well, I think it was in the book of Jaws, or maybe it was when I spoke to Sada and she was trying to explain to me like the idea of like a resting or like swallowing. And so she kind of talked about the position maybe of the teeth and then, you know, how the bottom jaw, that, you know, you almost want the teeth coming forward and slightly touching and, you know, being there and then the tongue resting, and then you should be able to swallow with your tongue. And the first time I tried that, holy shit, that was like it felt so weird to have my tongue resting against the top of my mouth and to swallow. And if anyone's listening to this at the moment, just try it now. Like put your tongue in the roof of the mouth mm-hmm. and try and swallow without your tongue moving. Like,
yeah, to be even more specific, for anybody that's listening, if you were to say the letter N, Nana, N, if you're producing that sound correctly, where the tip of your tongue hits, that's where the tip of your tongue should be anchored. And then when you swallow, the rest of that tongue has to come up. I mean, generally speaking, and I don't know if you've already talked about oral rest posture, like what that is on your podcast before. So maybe we can kind of start, we should start with that.
That'd be great.
Whole tongue should be resting up in the roof of the mouth. Now that means the tip, the middle, and the back of the tongue. Now that's where, if we have some kind of tongue tie restriction, it's going to be hard to get that whole tongue resting up there. You could maybe have the tip of the tongue up there, but if that mm-hmm. middle to back of the tongue is not up there, that is not good oral rest posture. And then when you swallow, the only thing different between your oral rest posture and when you swallow is your back teeth should come together. So I always quiz my patients, when is the only time that our back teeth should ever, 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 ever touch? And that is really when we're swallowing. The tip of the tongue is already up there. We swallow, that middle to back part of the tongue elevates up, seals, and then whatever we have in there, a bolus liquid, will be propelled down.
Ah, well, I can feel that as well. Like then you, when you say that, it's like really interesting to suddenly find that anchor in that end spot.
Mm-hmm. And then a really good test to know if you're swallowing correctly, if you take a sip of water and you try to swallow with your lips open like you're smiling, if you are not able to do that, that most likely means that you are asking for help from these other perioral muscles. There should be no reason that we shouldn't be able to swallow with our lips back, because we should not be using our lips to help us swallow.
I kind of feel like I should go and try that on camera and just see how wet I get.
Let's do it.
Right, I'm going to get a glass of water. Let's see what happens. Right, let's give this a go then. Let's see how wet I make my t-shirt trying to do this. But I don't think I can even smile with her. Hang on, lips are open.
Yep. So you would take the sip.
All right. Oh yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
And what you should feel, that water should be trapped. When you take that sip of water, it should be trapped between your tongue and the roof of your mouth. There should not be water spilling over into your vestibules.
Yep, I can feel that. Yeah, that's correct. There we go, guys. I've got that one nailed. So you can try that. It's on camera as well. You can see it. So that's basically the basics, let's say, of resting oral posture then, and maybe swallowing. With that, what you brought up then as issues with that, and I know this is something which seems to be an issue which goes around my friends who have kids, like tongue ties.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that sometimes it's just crack on, you don't need anything doing. Other times it's, you know, a major thing. Where do we sit with tongue ties?
It's all about function, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's really interesting because you can see some tongue ties where I could tell somebody that I see on the street what a tongue tie looks like, and they'll see a picture of it and they'd be like, wow, that person's tongue tied. Sometimes mm-hmm. they're very easily detectable. Now, sometimes those type of ties, some patients don't have any functional issues. So mm-hmm. if there's mm-hmm. no functional issues going on, why are we going to intervene surgically? There's no need. What benefit are they going to get from it?
Mm-hmm.
Then there could be some ties that are more posterior that aren't as easily detectable with the eye, and they're being very functionally impacted. And so sometimes we don't even know till we start working. You know, say I do an evaluation with a patient and I see what I think can possibly be some posterior restriction. I would never right off the bat make any kind of recommendation, because sometimes through therapy, we can optimize the function enough where it's no longer an issue.
Perfect.
So basically, like, I get the question from my students all the time, like, when do I know when the patient's ready for a tongue tie? You know, because you get to a point in your program where you can't go any further. And if you can't go any further, then that tongue tie is an issue. And tongue tie symptoms even vary. My nephew was tongue tied. My nephew had no issues breastfeeding at all whatsoever. I mean, he was so chubby, like so chubby. But then some babies, you know, they lose weight so quickly, their failure to thrive because of their tongue tie. Some people have speech issues because of their tongue tie. Some don't. Some also learn to compensate. A lot of people learn to compensate with their ties, whether that's, you know, postural, if it is speech production, maybe they're just not producing the sound correctly, but you don't hear it.
Okay.
And I don't know how, do you want me to get into like common symptoms that we see with tongue tie?
Yeah, maybe that might be pretty interesting. So with the tongue ties, what you were saying there then, with the potential bits that with them, just before we do go into that, like, so when you said it might be that they have trouble breastfeeding, so is that due to the inability of the tongue to then come up to basically form like a seal around the breast as they're—
Yes. So it depends, right? If we're talking about lip tie or tongue tie, right?
Okay.
So the lip tie
more the frenulum.
Yeah. So the lip, we have a frenulum under upper lip, lower lip. We have buccal ones as well. So cheek ones. That could impact the ability for the upper lip to flange well. Mm-hmm. So the upper lip needs to create that deep latch.
Okay.
And then the tongue tie. So think about, so the mechanisms, right, of breastfeeding, essentially. The nipple is drawn basically onto that baby's tongue almost as far back as that junction between your hard and your soft palate. So like right now, if you took your tongue and drew it across the top of your mouth, like you can feel hard palate until you get to the squishy part, right? Your soft palate. Mm-hmm.
Goes back that far.
Of the tongue has to do this pumping motion to be able to get that milk out. Now, if the baby can't, because they can't elevate their tongue enough to do so, they're going to have issues breastfeeding. And sometimes what happens too is, you know, we'll have moms come in and we talk about birthing history and we say, you know, were they breast or bottle fed? And they'll say, oh, well, I had supply issues. And sometimes it's not, it's the baby's inefficiency to extract that milk that then makes that supply go down. Think about supply.
Yeah,
and demand,
right?
So even sometimes hearing that on a patient's history, trouble, not even so much trouble breastfeeding, that the mom's just milk supply was low. That would even, you know, tune me into thinking like, ooh, okay, well, let's see what happens when we get to the, you know,
and I guess if
issues evaluation.
By the time they've got to you, that's already kind of been gone, and the child is almost certainly have finished breastfeeding unless they're kind of going to their 5 or 6 or 7. But But by from your perspective, is that something which, if you were at that situation when you were around someone, I mean, is there anything that can be done that early with the child potentially, or is it, do you have
like, could they have their tongue released, do you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the best time to do it is infancy. The very, very best time to do it is infancy. And the best form of, like, myofunctional therapy is breastfeeding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's that age group when the child gets, you know, 1, 2 years old. That's a really tough age because you have to think about compliancy, like behaviorally. Mm-hmm. How's that child going to be able to sit in the chair? Is the child going to let the parent get into the mouth to do the stretches?
Yeah.
So infancy is when it should be done. And I wish, and there are some countries where this happens, like Brazil, where every single infant that's born has a tethered oral tissues evaluation. That does not happen.
Wow, that's and crazy.
It's so bad.
That seems like it's just such a simple, like an obvious,
it's
simple
such
thing
a
to
simple
do.
Thing.
I mean, you think potentially how many, I don't know, potential people with sleep apnea or issues further down the line due to maybe just a simple tongue tie, which is then affecting whole facial oral structure, which then goes into potentially, you know, cause heart disease, like stroke, yeah. You know, everything that comes secondary to.
I was just at a conference, the AAPMD. So it's the American Academy of Physiological Medicine and Dentistry. So it's called, mm-hmm, Collaboration Cure. So we're really trying to get the medical and dental community to
combine. That's amazing.
And I met this cardiologist who, on all of his patients, is taking tongue range of motion ratios. I was like, oh my gosh, I literally need to clone you. Like, that was the most amazing thing I heard. And that just makes me so excited. And he's on a mission to be able to share all that knowledge. I think his wife is a pediatric dentist.
Wow.
So he learned all of this from his wife. And he said,
two and two together.
Yeah. The amount of patients that he sees that have sleep apnea. I mean, think about it. Of course, sleep apnea is going to cause damage and stress on the heart. It only makes sense.
I mean,
and every other, I don't know. There's a book called, what's it called? Treat the Cause, Treat the Symptom. It's by Dr. Steven Lamberg. I cannot remember the name right now. I have it out in my waiting room. But basically, each chapter goes through, a organ system, whether it's, you know, endocrinology, oncology, or I should say medical disciplines, really. And he's linking the likelihood of sleep apnea in these patients. It's a really interesting book.
I mean, I find that's fascinating because I don't know. I probably haven't said, I'd normally say it on every episode, so I might as well say it again. But like, I'm a nurse as a background. So my background was like cardiology as a nurse. And then I've gone to accident and emergency.
Okay.
And so cardiology is still like well and truly, you know, something I love. And one of the reasons I had to get out was I was just fed up with people coming in with coronary heart issues. And it was like, essentially, let's do take you into the cath lab, have a look at an angiogram. Oh, look, you've got some furring up. Here's 5 pills. Off you go. Like nothing else. There's no, you know, they can refer them to cardiology, cardiac rehab. But I mean, cardiac rehab was pretty terrible. Like, you know, it was awful, really. And I kind of, that's why I got out of nursing to a certain degree in general, because I was constantly, but I'm back in nursing a little bit and I watch every single person in accident emergency, the ER, and they're all, you know, slack jawed, like low slung jaws, like receded jawlines, all breathing far too fast, too heavy. And I just, and for me, I mean, these people who are coming in with coronary heart problems or with, you know, lung conditions, you know, I spend a lot of time working with COPD and asthma and the like, and there's nothing that the health service are doing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I look at it and the feedback that, or the help they're getting is basically take inhalers, take steroids, take blood thinners and stuff like that.
My father-in-law had a massive stroke in March, and the hospital he was at put him in a research study for sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a feeling that he had sleep apnea for some time, but whatever. So we had this sleep test done. Of course, it came back sleep apnea because the correlation between stroke patients and sleep apnea is also very high.
Yeah.
And then he was in the hospital, I want to say for like 3 or 4 weeks. And then he moved to the rehab facility, and he's been in the rehab facility since the end of March, beginning of April. We're now in middle of September.
Yeah.
And he's still not being managed for his sleep apnea. Now, a man, how is somebody supposed to recover from a stroke when they have lack of oxygen? How do you think he's getting optimal recovery?
Absolutely.
It is mind-boggling to me. And their answer to us is that, well, there's nothing we can do about it because he has to go to his, you know, primary care physician, have the sleep study done. The sleep study that was for the research study didn't count. And I'm like, but he's stuck here. Like, he can't go anywhere. So we're just gonna ignore it. Right. It's so irritating to me because he probably would be doing better in his recovery if this could just be managed. And it's something, again, so simple. I don't understand how we can't do that. I mean, I get it. Insurance and medical and let's not even talk about that, but
I mean, we're on the other side of things because we obviously don't have the insurance and medical side of things as such, but there's a constant lack of continuity of care for the most part. But also, I mean, over here, looking slightly outside someone's wheelhouse is just not done. And, you know, I've got two or three GP friends who are just have got fed up and are, you know, doing something different. I'm kind of starting to work with a guy called Dr. Steve. Yeah. And he got famous on over here because he stood up to the Secretary of Health about COVID and whatnot, and just said he wasn't vaccinated because he didn't really think the science was there yet, and blah blah blah. And anyway, so but he's one of these doctors. He's an intensive care doctor, but he's very much like breathing is like the foundation of so much. And so, you know, between he started a whole free program of like moving and breathing and bits and pieces to try to bring this stuff, you know, sleep, breathing, to more people to hopefully avoid them having to use the NHS, which is what we basically are trying to do.
Yeah. It's very frustrating at times, you know, and then it's there's just not enough of people advocating for their people. Yeah. You have to advocate for yourself, like forget about it, because nobody in the healthcare field is unfortunately going to advocate for you at this point.
No.
And my father-in-law, what he's been going through the last 6.5 months has just shown me so much in healthcare, and it's sad. Like, it's very, very sad.
It's just not healthcare though, is it? That's the problem. Yeah. It's just not healthcare. Yeah. It's just like sick care. It's just,
literally, that's such a good term for it.
Yeah. It's there's nothing about health that comes into it. And this is literally the thing. The reason I got fed up with nursing was just there's no health involved in it. And even though it's the National Health Service, there's no health. It's just how, and you know, this comes from the slightly hippie-ish kind of, you know, the side of things that we are, but like it does emergencies brilliantly, but like health, it just does terribly, and like chronic conditions. And, you know, as we've kind of already started to state, just how something as simple as, you know, and everyone, like not everyone, people like going to the gym. People like having wicked muscles and six pack abs and, you know, whatever else, but, you know, throat to cheeks or something is just an area in which no one would even consider that you would have, like, I mean, I'll be honest, hands up, until recently when I've been doing lots of work around the eyes and the kind of the muscles around the eyes, I definitely have not considered the muscles of the face at all in all of my stuff I do. I mean, I took me ages to start to learn them. So, you know, I mean, you can probably say however many muscles there are in the face that we need to work on, but yeah, it's going to be enough.
And simple things that you can do. I mean, I obviously always suggest having an evaluation by a trained provider, a myofunctional therapist, because myofunctional therapy is very individualized, right? Like, not everybody's going to need every exercise. There's going to be different interventions or different limitations that people are going to have that's going to affect their treatment. But just becoming more mindful, you know, setting a timer on your phone or picking a color. Like, let's say you pick the color blue, and every time you see the color blue, you're checking in on yourself. Mm-hmm. Where is my tongue? Is my tongue resting up in the roof of my mouth? Are my lips closed? How am I breathing? That repetition day in and day out alone can help to retrain that oral rest posture. So like I said, just having that, that mindfulness, you know, practicing, I don't know if you've talked about nasal hygiene on your episodes before, but.
Dive into it. Like, I think it's always good to, let's get, I mean, like I say, from everyone knows I do nothing but talk about like nasal breathing, nasal, whatever, but let's, I'm more than happy to like constantly talk about it. And I think the more times people hear it, like the better.
Yeah. And that's something that can easily be incorporated. And I have people that ask me all the time, like, well, why? And I'm like, well, you brush your teeth, right? Yeah. You take a shower, right? Yeah. Why wouldn't you clean your nose, right? Mm-hmm. Nasal hygiene. It's the same thing as personal hygiene and dental hygiene. It's preventative. It should be preventative. I don't have allergies. I don't breathe through my mouth, but I still practice daily nasal hygiene. It's simple. Mm-hmm. So I really like people say it clear, X-Clear. It has an X because it has xylitol in it. Xylitol is antimicrobial. I really like this nasal spray. And that's something, like I said, that you can begin incorporating today or tomorrow using a nasal spray, you know, twice a day. They have a kid's version. There's no reason the entire family can't be doing, you know, their nasal hygiene routine together. I'm also a huge fan of the Neti Stick, which is an aromatherapy inhaler.
Okay. So it's,
lavender, mint, eucalyptus, and menthol. Those are all nasal decongestants. Mm-hmm. We do an exercise with this that includes humming. And I'm sure you know a lot about humming and the wonderful benefits of humming.
Yeah.
I always tell my patients, I'm like, okay, we're going to do this exercise. You're going to think I'm a little crazy, but I promise I will explain why. And then,
so explain it then. Let's just quickly go through it. Explain it.
So what we do for the exercise, is a nasal inhaler. So you would insert it up your nose. You're going to block the other side. The sequence is you inhale, you hum, you swallow, and you exhale, and you would do three times on each nostril. When you exhale, you don't want to unplug this nose. If you have to take this out, you would take it out to exhale. So you inhale, swallow. Oh, I shouldn't have taken it out. And exhale, but I'm showing you guys, you get it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why do we do the humming? So the humming is supposed to help increase nasal nitric oxide. Nasal nitric oxide, well, not nitric oxide is produced in our entire body, but nasal nitric oxide is produced in our paranasal sinuses. So we do not get that when we breathe through our mouth. Nasal nitric oxide is a vasodilator. It's antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, antiviral. So if we're talking about allergies, we're talking about patients that have, you know, enlarged tonsils and adenoids, and we know that those are serving as an obstruction to breathing. And now we know that when we breathe through our nose, this wonderful molecule is released that is anti-inflammatory. It only makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And I always explain, when I explain, you know, the benefits of nasal breathing versus mouth breathing to my kids, you know, my kiddo patients, we talk about how when you breathe through your nose, you have a filter system, like the filter on a pool. It's going to filter out all that yucky stuff. When we breathe in our mouth, we don't have that. And again, you can explain, you can educate a four-year-old, you know, and there's no, that's one of the biggest things about myofunctional therapy. And sometimes my pet peeve is myofunctional therapy is so much more than just exercises, because the exercises alone aren't going to correct anything. You have to educate your patients. Your patients have to understand why they're doing something. Because if they don't, you know, there's definitely I think to everything, a mental piece to it. I want to know why somebody's telling me to hum. I'm not just going to hum because you told me to.
Exactly. Or, and hopefully you are, if on that as well, you also want to educate people to keep asking why. Do you know what I mean? Yes. Like, I mean, I was driving around the country yesterday with my best mate, and I was talking about this exact, but like the problem with the health service, really going back to that, is like, there's no why. The doctors have stopped asking why. And so, do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you've had a heart attack, here's five pills. Like, but it's like, but yeah, but why? And then you can kind of go, well, perhaps sleep apnea is an issue. Cool. But why have I got sleep apnea? Okay, cool. Well, actually, you know what I mean? Then you can almost get back to these very basic points of my facial posture and the like.
And it's the same, you know, we in dentistry, like I was a hygienist for how long? 5 years before I became a myofunctional therapist. And I can't tell you how many patients I recommended a night guard to. I mean, think about, there's so many patients out there, people out there that clench and grind their teeth a lot. And yes, a night guard, like a traditional night guard, is going to protect your teeth. Like you might not grind your teeth, but why are we clenching and grinding? Like we have to figure out why. And they're doing such great research now that's showing how it's a protective mechanism of your body. You know, so think about when you clench and grind your teeth, you activate certain muscles that actually help to bring your lower jaw forward. Now in dental sleep medicine, we make sleep apnea patients appliances that literally do just that. These appliances advance that lower jaw forward to open the airway. Your body's a beautiful thing. It wants to keep you alive. Exactly. So again, it makes sense. Now I'm not saying that every single person in the universe that clenches or grinds their teeth, absolutely 1000% has obstructive sleep apnea or some kind of sleep disordered breathing. I do think there's a very strong correlation. Yeah. But in my opinion, if we have that piece of information before we put anybody in a traditional night guard that can make their airway worse, it can make the problem worse, why not just send them for a sleep study? Get that clearance that it's not an issue. And then you know what you're doing is not going to have negative effects on the patient. It's something so simple. But on the flip side, making a night guard is also something very simple for a dentist to do that is going to increase their production.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's sad, but that's
what it comes down to. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, far too often.
I pissed off some dentists, that's for sure, telling their hygienist that they have to screen for airway before they, you know, recommend a night guard for somebody.
But again, that comes, it's a bit of a sad thing when, again, the health isn't the priority. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being naive, but you know, you kind of feel you go into medicine, whether dental medicine or whatever, but to help people, you know, nursing, doctoring, whatever, but kind of to help people and to make, not just to, you know, get them out of your way and whatever else as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I mean, and that is something that's really awesome about the people that are in this, you know, airway field, whichever way they're coming at it, you know, this general dentist, speech therapist, this cardiologist that I met, there is just something in like the passion behind these people. You know, they want to take, they take the time, they do a very thorough evaluation before they go recommending anything. Because look at the end of the day, like, let's say we're talking about dentistry and somebody needs all this restorative work, like crowns, implants, what have you. If you don't address the airway first, your work's going to fail. So why? That's not putting a good name behind you, right?
No.
And that's the part that I just don't get. Or even with orthodontists, like, you know, this is an issue. You know, this patient's probably going to come back because their case is going to relapse. So just address it now.
So in orthodontistry, then what's the, whether there's a round figure or not, but people who have orthodontistry and then kind of end up, and most of the time, again, people end up having orthodontistry because of crooked, like both of my brothers had it. I never had it, but you know, they were both big thumb suckers. Maybe we should bring up thumb sucking as well. Yeah. But like, my big brother, Tim, ended up having, I mean, he had the full headgear and, you know what I mean? Everything. So he was obviously pulling his teeth back into his head, or his upper jaw, they were trying to pull that back in, I guess. But what is the level of relapsing? Like, is there a figure, roughly a percentage that kind of goes around?
I mean, I don't know, honestly, if there's like an actual percentage, like, you know, like research percentage or something, but
it's definitely a thing.
Again, if we're saying that form follows function and if you don't correct that underlying dysfunction, we have patients that wear the retainers religiously and still relapse. Your teeth will move. Your muscles are always going to win. Always, 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 always.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that percentage, but I know that it's higher. And when I network with orthodontists, they're like, oh my God, this is great. Just tell me, like, who do we have to send to you? And I'm like, literally anybody that comes through an orthodontist office has muscle dysfunction. It's what got them there. That is what made, you know, the arches narrow, made the teeth crowded. It was that underlying muscle dysfunction. Thumb sucking, that's a big one. So think about,
so let's get into thumb sucking then. I've got a question first, because when I spoke to Sandra and I brought up thumb sucking, partly because I think my wife, somewhere around, my wife still sucks a thumb, as everyone knows. But she, so when I asked Sandra, I said, is thumb sucking ever ever a good thing type thing? Because it seems to be something which pretty much most, I mean, I apparently never suck my thumb, but a lot of kids will suck their thumb at some point. And, you know, she comes from an anthropological background as well. And she said, yes, there probably is something. So there's an evolutionary reason why, but we should have like got it out of our system by age, whatever she said it was. Like, it was like over a year ago, I can't remember, like two or three or something like that. Yeah. And then if we haven't, like, again, there's the question, why not? And, you know, through my work with Gary and Anatomy of Motion and things, I've heard stories about how a thumb sucking, and because of the way you push up into the roof of the mouth, how moving that kind of sphenoid and whatever else around, how that then completely changed a back pain purely. And so it was almost, what was it, back or knee pain? So they were like sucking their thumb to try to move things to then affect how their knee pain felt, which is, you know, which is pretty crazy. But so yes, from your perspective on thumb sucking, as far as how much does a thumb suck affect facial posture? Mm-hmm. Is that a thing? Because that's what everyone said. That's what the orthodontists were.
It when certainly both my affects brothers it. So we look at three things: the frequency of it, the duration, and the intensity. Now, I think, relatively speaking, they say that habits up until age three are technically considered normal. I personally don't believe that, but I like, if you look that up, I'm pretty sure that's what it would say. Mm-hmm. I know that a pacifier is recommended for the first like 6 months of life to prevent SIDS. But also if a baby doesn't want a pacifier, like that's totally okay too. I mean, there is like, right, a self-soothing thing. That's why anybody does any kind of habit, whether they bite their nails, you know, bite their hair, bite their lips, suck their cheek, whatever. It turns on the brain and it senses all those good feeling, you know, neurotransmitters. So when I see somebody, you know, sucking their thumb, I more think that there's a potential airway thing that's going on, because when you, anything, suck your thumb, bite your nails, whatever, your tongue's going to come out of your airway. And it also brings your lower jaw forward. That lower jaw will come forward. Now, we just talked about why the lower jaw coming forward is good, because it's going to help open the airway. Now, I think that oral habits definitely affect that craniofacial development, because remember we talked about, we want that tongue being in the roof of the mouth from birth. Your tongue is what is going to, the forces of it laterally and anteriorly is going to help grow that upper jaw. Well, now your jaw only has your thumb to grow around. So it's not abnormal to then see that high vaulted palate when that thumb has been up there, because you don't suck your thumb with your thumb under your tongue. Your thumb sits on top of your tongue.
I just tried that. I don't know if you saw that. That's what I was sucking my thumb through. I was just trying to go, where does the tongue? Oh no, that's definitely beneath the thumb. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, definitely going to cause some issues there with growth. It also can impact the way the teeth come in. So it's not abnormal to see like the teeth flaring. So the upper teeth flaring out from, you know, that.
That's what my big brother definitely had. He was definitely kind of like really gap toothed and like, he was a big thumb sucker.
But I will say there was a dentist. His name's Dr. Antonio Ferrante. I think he's out of Italy. Who said that when you have the tongue resting in the correct position, so up in the roof of the mouth, that also helps to turn the brain on and will release, you know, those neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, what have you. So what's interesting with our programs is as we start to re-educate these muscles and we start to correct that oral rest posture, that need to want to have to suck your thumb kind of
reduces.
And the other huge thing, and I don't know, you know, there's a great book. It's called Atomic Habits, I think.
Yeah. It's a James Clear one.
Yeah. You want to know like what triggers the habit. Is there an association with it? So like with some kids, it's not abnormal for there to be like either a blankie or like a little stuffed animal. And anytime that blankie or stuffed animal is in their arms, that thumb just like immediately goes in. So for part of our habit, because we do habit elimination program, that is like our first step. We always eliminate the habit first, do our myofunctional therapy.
And on that very quickly, sorry, if anyone wants to see that, you've got quite a few photos and videos on your Instagram page, which I've obviously had a look through previous this and stuff, but they're three weeks, like for some of them, two or 3 weeks. And the difference in the teeth and the jaws is already crazy.
Crazy. It really is. And as long as the child or the adult wants to stop, that's the first thing. If they don't want to stop, it's going to be very, very hard to correct that habit. They have to want to stop. And then it's all about empowering that child and giving them, you know, the tools to help them, you know? But yeah, once we can get that thumb or finger or whatever out of there, like you saw, I know what picture you're talking about, that child's bite closed, teeth that were just stuck up there started to erupt down. It's pretty incredible. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, little appliances and things like that, that can be helpful. Like, you know, replace the negative habit with a positive one. So like there's something called a Mayo Munchie. They're out of Australia. That we use sometimes with our habit elimination programs. So to give them that like oral sensory feedback can be really helpful too at times.
Just as an off, because we've basically run through the hour, which is obscene. But my functional therapists then, are they all from a dentistry background? Are they all, or do they, can anyone go like, because I'm just thinking like in case anyone has an interest in what you do and anything else like that.
A lot of us are usually registered dental hygienists or speech language pathologists, but there's also some physical therapists, occupational therapists. I know a couple nurses.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some kind of healthcare license to be able to take the course. Okay. And then there's different courses out there and stuff to take as well, different institutes.
So I mean, I could definitely keep talking to you for another couple of hours probably, but I know you've got to go in a minute and, you know, the Queen's being buried on TV at the moment. So, you know, that's all going on. But first things first, we've got the final question, which hopefully you might be able to give us a little something for that people can do. But obviously the last question is always, if you could offer anyone who's listening to this a little tidbit takeaway that they could put into their daily life, maybe only takes them, you know, 3, 5, 10 minutes a day, that might help them move, breathe, to hopefully live a happy, healthier life. What could you potentially give them to have a little go at? And obviously there'll be a video of it, so they can always access the video if you need to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, we kind of already talked about it. Nasal hygiene, start it tomorrow. There's no reason you shouldn't. It doesn't have to even be the clear nasal spray I suggested. I mean, if you want to do a neti pot, I mean, whatever, but practice some kind of daily nasal hygiene. I think, which I know you talk a lot about movement, like we have to get up, we have to move around, we have to stretch, we have to exercise. We can't be slumped over all day long at our computers.
Yeah.
And have those check-ins for yourself about where your tongue rests, because where your tongue rests matters. Keep your lips closed, bring your tongue up to the magic spot up there, sit up nice and straight and breathe through your nose. Check, like I said, put alarms on your phone that go off, you know, every couple hours. And it, for adults especially, you can retrain your oral rest posture.
So with that then, can you just go over it one more time? The tongue resting posture. So people who maybe weren't paying attention or were driving, whatever, what is the correct, where are we looking for a much more optimal tongue resting posture? Yep.
So tip of the tongue is going to be up right behind the upper front teeth. So again, if you say the letter N, tip of the tongue should be there. Rest of the tongue should be lightly suctioned up there. So I'm going to do it and then drop my jaw so you can see. So the whole tongue should be suctioned up there. Lips should be closed. You should be breathing through your nose. Your back teeth should be hovering over each other. That you don't want them in contact. The only time your teeth should ever touch is when you swallow, but you don't want them gaping open either. That can also cause some TMJ issues. So you want to have those teeth hovering right over each other. Check those three things, sit up nice and straight, pretend like somebody's pulling a string from the top of your head. Leave a sticky note on your computer. If you are somebody that sits at your computer, leave yourself a sticky note. Check your oral rest posture. Everybody can do it.
Yeah. And what just with that, I saw Brian McKenzie. I don't know if you follow Brian McKenzie from Shift Adapt and stuff, but he posted something the other day and I'd never tried it. And I just thought how actually, as soon as you get your tongue into that resting posture and then you try and open your mouth and breathe, you just can't.
You can't breathe in your mouth if your tongue is up. Everybody try it right now. It's pretty amazing.
It blew my mind.
You can't.
You just immediately draw through your nose. And I guess that goes back to, as you said, as children, we are born nasal breathers, and the tongue is resting up there and it just forces you to breathe through your nose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Brilliant. 100% obligate nasal breathers.
Thank you so much, Brittany. It's been an absolute pleasure. And before we do finish, if you can just quickly let people know where they can find you, if they want to know more about what you offer. You know, obviously a big chunk of my listenership is going to be in the UK, so whatever, but if you can just who you are, you know, yeah, where people can find you and where people can maybe dig into these bits.
Yeah, and you could always, you know, share this with anybody as well. But our Instagram page is CT_oral facial_myology. So CT oral facial myology. Our website is www.myctom.com. You can email me, hello@myctom.com. Anyway, we're on Facebook, CT oral facial myology. But our Instagram page is definitely our more popular page.
That's amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Thanks for coming and talking to me and like enlightening me about more things as far as breastfeeding and all sorts is concerned. So yeah, as always, just brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.